fixed mindset is different than a growth mindset. Simply put, Chris Shade shares with us today on Knucklehead Podcast the differences. Enjoy.
Choose not to live in a world of filters. Realize your mistakes. Set the foundation for your success. Get some wins. Knucklehead Podcast.
All right. Well, welcome to another edition of Knucklehead Podcast. You've got with you today the Knucklehead, Stephen. And I'm excited about today's guest for a couple reasons. It's not all the time that we have the privilege and the honor of having a former principal on our show. Most of the time we're, you know, it's reserved for, you know, tinkers and sales folks and business owners, but that's what I love about our guest today. Chris is, Chris Shade, welcome to the show, buddy. How are you?
Thank you. I'm honored that you chose me to be a part of the show.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know what drew me in about you is the fact that there you were, a grown man, a father, proud speaker, principal, and you talked about how Brené Brown retweeted one of your tweets, and you were as giddy as a high school girl. And I thought that that was the most engaging way to start a talk.
Yeah, it's, I tell you, she has impacted my life beyond measure, absolutely. Without a doubt.
Absolutely. Well, we appreciate you being courageous, coming on the show, communicating a little bit about, you know, some of your experiences in, you know, in the professional world with, as it relates to being a principal, but then also in the speaking world, because you're an entrepreneur out there. You're out there mixing it up, putting yourself out there and being vulnerable on stage and communicating material that sometimes doesn't go over so well with your audiences. You know what I mean?
I am very fortunate to be able to do that. I work part-time in a school district and the other half doing those speaking engagements. So I am so very blessed.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, here at Knucklehead, we have a premise, and that is we encourage folks, don't be beta. And the reason why we say that is for a couple different ways. We understand that comes off as offensive and a little bit of, you know, rubs people the wrong way. But quite frankly, that's what we need whenever we're engaged in a learning process. We have to break down the walls of what has always been done so we can actually humble ourselves enough to move forward or realize that there's probably something that somebody else may know that we don't. And the way to move forward is to get some wins. So those are essentially the premises for how we start the show. Don't be beta and go out and get some wins. And that was part of the reason why we wanted to have somebody who talked about the growth mindset. And those for unfamiliar, Chris, can you talk about, you know, real quickly, just what the growth mindset is and where that concept starts?
The concept that Carol Dweck wrote about in her book Mindset was that there are really two types of mindsets or views of the world. One is a fixed mindset, believing that intelligence is fixed and unchanging. And that of a growth mindset that believes that we can have influence on our learning and our own growth.
Yeah, I mean, so it seems so simple. Right? It seems so very simple. So there's got to be an experience that where this concept coming from your perspective of being a principal and testing and helping people move through the process where that was almost like a foreign concept to you. So was there a situation where when you first learned about it, you're like, whoa, 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 hold up. This doesn't matter.
Well, the thing that I appreciate her having come out and written about after her book was published and cited in so many other works, from education books to Harvard Business Review, was that people were taking that concept and perhaps putting a wrong spin on that. In that, she wanted us to know that we all are both a growth mindset and fixed mindset, that we have areas of our lives that we remain fixed in and view our abilities that I can't change that. And so that's, I think, an important concept that she brings about. Professionally, off the cuff, I'm trying to think of that example. I know personally I've been trying to learn guitar. It is not going very well. And I certainly have battled that fixed mindset about whether I could really do that or not.
Well, sure. No, I can imagine that. Well, I think even just your the microcosm of your, so your career in a way, you know, starting as a principal, but then now going out and speaking and engaging with audiences and communicating with really people from all walks of life, understanding that, you know, there's parents out there that want the best for their kids, right? There's parents out there that truly want their kids to progress and potentially build on what they've been able to do. However, the way that they go about it, in some cases, we end up passing on some of our misconceptions in some cases to our kids, as opposed to what really is helpful.
That can certainly happen. You know, when I'm reminded of when you talk about our kids and raising our kids, ultimately there comes a time where we let them go. I've spoken on the concept of mindset from kindergartens to college professors. And when you mentioned a time where I found that difficult, I did have a talk at a university, and I found that when my kids went to college, for all we've invested in that, which has been a lot of dollars, I am afraid to say, I found that the traditional models of lecture still remain. And that when my son was in business school, I expected him to be doing these amazing projects on marketing, for example, which I've been interested in, and they were doing definitions. So one of the things I have found is the mindset of this is the way that we do it in this particular case at the university level, and this is what we're going to do. Whereas they were struggling with working with first generation college students, mainly of poverty, and they were having a issue relating to kids. And and you know, as I presented and tried to offer a different narrative from getting up and moving around the classroom to standing on the desk to get attention to a variety of things, I certainly encountered that, yeah, but we're not going to do that here mentality.
That's interesting. What do you feel like contributes most to the amount of energy that gets exuded to maintain the status quo? Or do you feel like, given some of your own examples professionally or setbacks where there's a little bit of fear, the fear of change that just ends up overwhelming this energy towards, well, let's look at the productive benefit of change.
Yeah, you know, that particular system, as I having encountered that with a child working on his master's and my daughter in her undergrad, that institution is very steeped in its tradition and in the way that we've always done it. Mentality. There's things that I find confusing about that system, such as from something as simple as having to retake English and algebra and American history. Why do we do that? Because we've always done it. Why do we have our kids invest, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars to pour into that system? I don't understand that. And the issue, I suppose, of tenure. What I found was interesting is my wife, who's also an educator, had made a post on Facebook, which I typically try to avoid. But there was a comment that a professor, a colleague of hers, really slammed the public education folks, and I went on and commented that I believe that we need to have a conversation from early childhood through college. And her response was, "I never thought about college being involved in the conversation." So I thought that was interesting.
Sure. Well, that's what sometimes new ideas are met with resistance, and sometimes, you know, sometimes that resistance is coming from a place where it's rooted in fear, and sometimes it's rooted in actual, you know, productive, you know, dialogue back and forth where we can debate the merit of the ideas. So let me ask you a question, Chris. So you're now a speaker, and you do work still in kind of academia at this point. Is that part-time? Is that correct?
Yes, I'm part-time in Denton Independent School District, where I've been 10 years. 2 years ago, I floated the idea of going part-time. Initially, I had thought I could retire technically in Texas at 52, which is only a few years from now, and I would put a few more years in and retire and go into public speaking full-time. And then I went, why wait? What if I pitch this idea of going part-time? And when I went to talk to my boss, he said, I was afraid you were coming here to quit to do that full time. So we can keep you here part time. Let's do it. And so it's been a real win-win for both of us.
Good for you.
Yeah.
That's exciting. That's not always arranging a win-win type scenario is not always the most.
Well, I kept about 90% of my duties for half the pay, but for me, it was worth it in that I had freedom and flexibility over my schedule, which you can't put a dollar amount.
That's the truth. Well, let's talk real quick about a time where seemingly, you know, up into this time, you've been able to afford yourself some flexibility. Now you're able to go speak, still able to work part time. But there's got to been a time where you were just like, oh my gosh, I wish I hadn't have done that. Or man, this personal setback really kind of cost me professionally here. Or was there a time where you had to encounter some of that resistance?
When I first became principal, I was the fourth principal in 5 years. There was a turnstile on that door, and I had been an assistant principal for 1 year before becoming principal, and you know, had some insight on what I believed really needed to happen, which was an emphasis on culture, because I truly believed that by improving culture, that academics would follow, and. The mistake that I made is believing that what we needed to do was really invest in a social skills curriculum, and really do some good teaching around behavioral expectations and so on and so forth. And I brought in a high-powered, high-priced consultant from New York City who came and trained our staff in this smaller town in West Texas, and bought into a very expensive curriculum, and then I found out real quick that the job of the principal is very different than what I had learned in college, and that I really didn't learn a thing in those hours of professional preparation in my master's. And so, you know, I found myself overwhelmed with the number of responsibilities of a building administrator. And quite frankly, I will never have a job as difficult as the job of a building principal. And what I realized is because I got overwhelmed in my daily task and demands, which in that role are frequent. Most tasks, research shows, the principal lasts under 1 minute, and most are spent interrupted. And anyway, I did not give emphasis to that. I no longer brought it up in staff meetings, the announcements with kids about what goal we were emphasizing that week. I started out strong for maybe 2 weeks. And then it got left off the table, and I realized as I was began observing that not only were teachers not teaching this particular social skills curriculum I bought into, they were not very appreciative of that particular idea, mainly because our teachers' plates are so. There's so many things on their plate. This was one more thing, and I realized that year that if you don't inspect what you expect, it's going to be really difficult to see any outcome whatsoever. And you know, it really was a time when I went, man, I screwed this up, and taking feedback from teachers said, we're going to scrap this, even though we invested, you know, dollars into the training and content. I realized this is not what we needed after all.
And I mean, think about that. I mean, think about that reflection that you just talked about. I mean, as a principal, as the de facto kind of head leading the direction of the, you know, the curriculum that these that teachers have to communicate to their, not only their students, but then also have buy-in whenever they're doing parent teacher conference. I can imagine that was, the pressure was immense. You wanted to see this through because it was your initiative, your idea. You know, in the sales and business world, I mean, if it's your idea, your baby, you got to see it all the way through to the end. Otherwise, you lose face. I mean, that was probably an incredibly self-reflective moment.
And yet I think ditching it actually saved face. I've certainly seen other administrators who said, by golly, I invested in this. We're going to do this and ride it out to no more success and just scrapping it.
Sure. No, I can understand that. Well, I like how you you summarize that lesson as inspect what you expect. I've heard that said during my time in the Marine Corps. I've heard that said in my time in operations and sales, business development. And it's nice to hear the leadership over there in academia can go through that and draw some of the same lessons about the quality of that principle. So anything else? Well, we're in closing here. So anything else that you want to leave our audience with in terms of inspect what you expect or ways to support Chris Shade in the speaking business right now, Chris?
You know, I have appreciated so much. You opened with Brené Brown. Her work really gave me language to be able to be a risk taker. She does such a great job of talking folks through the concept of vulnerability, which we think is weakness, but she describes and defines as risk, uncertainty, and emotional exposure. And it wasn't until I heard her on a podcast say to the U.S. military, name one act of courage that doesn't require risk-taking, not knowing the outcome, or being open for criticism afterwards. And that really was an eye-opener for me. And I began to realize, I read her work, about the importance if you are aiming for creativity and innovation to embrace vulnerability. And she does amazing work that has been hugely impactful in what I've been able to accomplish and do.
Well, the fact that there's people out there understanding that there's strength in vulnerability, and where you're vulnerable, there is there's the opportunity to fail, which you and I both know that if you're not willing to take risks, you absolutely guarantee that you will not fail, but you also guarantee that there is zero chance that you're going to succeed. So you have to take risks. A prerequisite to accomplishment is taking a risk, up to and including looking like a buffoon. And that's what Knucklehead Podcast really is rooted in. We take pride in the fact that there's not one of us out there that is not a knucklehead in some way, shape, or form, personally or professionally. And so it's in these setbacks or these failures or these screw ups that we can have some strength and really rely on other folks that are going through similar sets of circumstances to move away from those failures, distance themselves from it. So, Chris, real quick, how can people find you? Social media, email, however, how can people find your content?
Yeah, I have presence there on Facebook and Twitter, both under the handle Under Whose Shade. WHOSE and then last name SHADE, Under Whose Shade. That kind of came from quote, the true meaning of life is to plant trees under whose shade you do not expect to sit, which is often what I see when I do a presentation. I may not see the fruits of it. Sometimes it's so fortunate to hear teachers provide feedback and hear students give feedback. And so that's one way I get to hear about that. But there are times when I go in and present and don't get to see the fruit that came from that. So that's where I got the handle. That's where you can certainly find me. And yeah.
Well, I love that. So judging the quality metric of that day based off not just what the result was, but how hard you worked and what seeds you went out and sowed, depending upon your belief system or your philosophy. But I really enjoy the fact that you really want to hear the stories and see the result of the work that you're doing. However, I think it may be some time before we truly can measure that. I just know that some of the work that you put in a few weeks ago when I got a chance to hear you, we really enjoyed it. We not only did we really enjoy it, we try to embrace it day in and day out. And it's just reassuring to hear other folks out there champion that same message. So you got support here.
Appreciate All right. Thank you.
No problem at all. All right, guys, with that, we're wrapped. Chris Shade over at Under Who Shade on Twitter and Facebook, even though he likes to steer away from Facebook from time to time, especially when his wife's blasting out there on social media. He'll still get retweeted from Brene Brown from time to time. Chris, we appreciate your time. Thank you very much. And those of you, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, those of you who like listening to the Knucklehead Podcast, we have a new episode every Tuesday. You can check us out on Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, and check us out on knuckleheadpodcast.com. If you want to fall asleep, we have a YouTube channel too. Those are, they're good videos there that you can, they're like Novocaine in a way. They help you go to sleep. So anyway, with that, we are wrapped. Chris, have a good rest of the week, and everybody else, talk to you soon.